Welcome to the Womanist Voice podcast. I am Dr. Sarah Hussain, and today we will be discussing mental health. Mental health affects how we think, feel, and act. It also helps determine how we handle stress, relate to others, and make healthy choices. So it is important for us to ensure we take care of our mental health. Today, I am joined by Rahima Hussain, who is a mental health educator, a mental health first aider, and a Time to Change champion. Rahima delivers mental health workshops with the aim to raise awareness around mental health and to help break the stigmas that are attached to mental health. Welcome and thank you for joining us, Rahima. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm well as well, even though it's cold. So, Rahima, can you begin by elaborating on what is meant by mental health?
Okay, so thank you for having me, Dr. Sarah. Just before we start, I just need to put a disclaimer out there because we'll be discussing mental health. We might be touching on some emotive content, so just important that I do put that disclaimer out there. And secondly, even though we are discussing mainly women's mental health, it doesn't take away from the importance that males also suffer with mental health problems, and that is just equally as important. So mental health, it's your psychological and your emotional well-being, and you already touched on it with your description in the beginning. So mental health is what's going on the inside. We can't see it, and that's why it's easy to ignore. And Mental Health Foundation, they describe it as internal weather, so it affects how you feel on the inside. So some days you can feel bright, you know, when it's sunny and you feel good and you want to do things. And then some days it can feel like dark and rainy, and them days you might feel like you just don't want to do anything. So it's like internal weather, you can't really see it. So with mental health, it affects your ability to do the things that you want to do, like working, studying, and just looking after yourself. So just as we have physical health, we all have mental health. And there should be equality between the two. So for example, today, let's say I had a cough, and I'm feeling unwell, you'll be able to see that I've got a cough physically, I'm feeling unwell. Yeah. And I might have sort of like an unwritten plan of what I would do. So I would, you know, get the phone, call my GP, make an appointment, they prescribe me with medication. So it's sort of like an unwritten plan. Physically, I feel unwell, I might feel more comfortable getting help. But with mental health, you can't see it. So it's easier to mask, it's easier to hide. Yeah. But we should be treating them both equally. So we should recognize that how am I feeling mentally today on a scale of 1 to 10, and do I need support, do I need help, what plan do I have in place if I am feeling mentally unwell? And then it might be ringing a friend, a family member, or you might feel like you might need to go to the GP for some help. We should still recognize that mental health is just as important as our physical health. It really comes down to the importance of talking about your feelings and recognizing how you feel. And what happens is, when you don't talk about your feelings, you tend to internalize them feelings. Okay. And that's when your mental health starts to decline. And I just wanted to share a really good analogy that just helped me. And the reason I'm going to share this is because I'm going to refer back to it throughout this conversation. And it's the cupboard analogy. And that basically is, when I was struggling with my own mental health, which is why I got into this journey of raising awareness, it's the idea that when we're struggling, we find it easier of putting it into the cupboard. So let's say something happened in my life, I don't want to deal with it. So the easy thing is, I'm going to put it into this cupboard. So imagine your whole life goes and you put everything into this cupboard. And one day what's going to happen is, what happens if the cupboard's too full and you're trying to put one more thing in it? Everything's going to fall out. That's basically burnout. So that cupboard can't take it anymore. Yeah. It's forcing you. You have to deal with this now. You can't keep masking it and putting it away. So before you get to that cupboard overflowing, you need to look after yourself along the way before you get to that overflowing cupboard. So that's the analogy I always use.
And it's a good analogy. And to take it further, there's got to be good stuff in the cupboard.
Yeah.
Healthy content in the cupboard.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What you put inside the cupboard as well makes a difference.
Yes.
Great. That's a great analogy. Thank you. Today, I would like to focus in particular on women and mental health, as you mentioned before. According to Dora Cohen, who wrote the book Women and Mental Health, she states that although women as a gender do live longer than men, mm-hmm. they have more mental health problems. Why do you think that is, Rahima?
Well, so according to the Mental Health Foundation, their report, the rates of self-harm among women, they have tripled. So women are more likely to experience eating disorders, post-traumatic stress, anxiety, and depression. So if we think about women, some of their roles, they mainly are carers. So it might be carers of parents, elderly, you know, elderly parents, young children, families. So what happens is sometimes when you have that focus and you're prioritizing them other people that you're caring for, that can lead to burnout because you're not looking after yourself, self-care, you know, there's no self-care implemented. That can lead to burnout, anxiety, stress. And then we've got hormonal changes. So, you know, the monthly cycle, the fluctuating of the hormones, that can affect your mood, stress as well. And then the huge topic of menopause, there's a lot more research around that now, but menopause has a huge impact on your mental health, and we're probably going to touch on that a bit more later. And then we've got perinatal depression. So after having a baby, that has a huge impact on a woman. Obviously, the new responsibility, having to care for another small little being. After having a baby, you have your body changes as well. So, you know, maybe weight gain, or if you've had surgery or something, you might be left with scarring. Again, that affects how you feel about your body.
Yeah.
Some women might experience traumatic birth, so that can affect them for a very long time. The experience that they had after birth, and sometimes medical conditions that they might be left with, that can contribute to, you know, the mental health declining. Research shows that 37% of women who have mental health problems, they have experienced some sort of abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, domestic violence. And having experienced that, that can lead to post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
And that's something that is a long term they have to deal with unless they seek the help for it. And also, I feel like now with women having to work and manage home life, that can be very stressful. Mm. That can lead to anxiety, trying to, you know, keep loads of, you know, wobbling all the plates, trying to balance it all. And eventually one of the plates is going to fall. And I think that's something I'm really trying to work on, is that home life balance.
Yeah.
And if you don't find that balance, that can lead to stress as well.
Yeah.
So I think these are all big contributors to the mental health, declining mental health.
It's really interesting that you, just to go off tangent there a little bit, but you talk about the home and the work balance. And then, you know, traditionally, you know, it used to be that when a woman was a homemaker, there seemed to have been a balance there. And now I think it's kind of seen as regressive if a woman is, sometimes it's viewed as regressive if a woman stays at home and is a homemaker. But actually, like you just mentioned, there are so many benefits of, you know, a woman feeling like she's being taken care of, for her to feel more secure within herself. And I was going to talk about, because Dora in her books does make the links to menses, childbirth and menopause, but what I was going to ask you is that, how do you think we can then better support these women, because there's a lack of awareness?
Well, firstly, obviously, being a listening ear, and I feel like women should be women's biggest supporters, because, you know, we've been through childbirth, you've been through childbirth, I know how you might be feeling.
Yeah.
You might not, even though our childbirth might have looked differently, but essentially the feelings you feel after you've had a baby are very much the same. And I remember no one told me about the baby blues. And I remember having my first child and feeling that I should be feeling, you know, how the movies look, excited, and this is my first baby.
Yeah.
And oh my God. I mean, you did with the baby, but I was like, how come I'm not feeling like this? But I actually went into this survival mode, that this is my responsibility. I need to take care of him. And I remember him crying, and the midwife took him and he went quiet. And then she passed it back to me and he started crying. And I thought, oh, damn, I'm the mum. He needs to be not crying with me. But then I realised that, and I was emotional for around 2 weeks, and I just kept crying. And then I was really excited and all these hormones. And the midwife said, this is normal for about 2 weeks. Your hormones are just trying to, you know, regulate. And I didn't know that. So I feel like them conversations and educating women that this is what your body's going to go through, and that's okay, and that's normal, and, you know, then you feel that takes that pressure off as well. So education, having that conversation, supporting one another, I think they're big factors.
That sort of allyship.
Yeah.
So Dora further explains that on the one hand, women may be seen as fragile, irritable, oversensitive, and fluctuating in mood, and therefore be given a diagnosis such as hysteria. On the other hand, real issues such as social, cultural, and personal inequalities that may make a difference to the mental health and quality of life of women have not received the recognition and attention they deserve. I really feel that this is an important point, because a woman who has financial worries is likely to feel more stressed than a woman who doesn't carry that same burden of worry, for example. And the point about the labelling of women who are experiencing mental health issues really struck me. How detrimental do you think it is to label women as oversensitive who are dealing with real issues pertaining to mental health?
Yeah, so this is my favourite question, because, you know, I feel like growing up I was always called, you're too sensitive.
Yeah.
Why are you crying all the time? Yeah. You take things the wrong way. And I always associated the word sensitive as something negative.
Yeah.
But recently I've really shifted my mindset
when it comes to that.
Yes. So firstly, it's like asking ourselves, what does the word sensitive mean? Like, what does it mean? And is it something admirable or is it something that's negative?
I love that, yeah.
And I think that often people, we use this term in a negative way.
Yeah.
And it's associated with being weak or you're not thick-skinned, you're overreacting. But what I've learned now, that actually is my superpower, because I associate it with thoughtfulness, empathy, awareness, creative thinking. And I think that when a person's expressing themselves, there's not sort of a right or a wrong way, because everyone expresses themselves differently.
Yeah.
And I think that when a person actually is uncomfortable with the way you're expressing yourself, then what they might do is they might say you're sensitive as a means of diverting or shutting you down.
So
I feel like it makes you feel like your point is less credible, and they make you feel like you're not thinking rationally, or you're too emotional, you're not
thinking
clearly.
So someone wants to insult you and then say you're oversensitive.
Yes, that's it. And what ends up happening is when someone makes you feel like that, you then internalize your feelings, because you feel like this is not a safe space for me to express myself. I'm being shut down. So I'm going to internalize my feelings. And then that's when you start feel low mood, depressed, and then going right back to that cupboard analogy where, okay, do you know what? I can't express myself here, so I'm just going to store it away in the cupboard.
Yes.
So I think it's a big factor. That's big, very dangerous to use that word sensitive in a negative way.
And it goes back to this allyship of, as a, you know, as one in this kind of fight for, you know, equality and respect, to kind of undermine another woman's issues by calling her sensitive when you know there are real issues that need to be spoken about, is quite inconsiderate. And and I really agree with you. I do think that you know, being sensitive, it is more about being thoughtful and considerate towards other people's feelings. And and I actually know you individually, so I know that you are very thoughtful, and I think it's such an admirable quality. So further literature shows that there is a general agreement that women report more psychiatric disorders than men, and vastly outnumbered them in certain disorders such as depression, anorexia, and bulimia. I know you mentioned this at the beginning. Do you think that social media and the pressure for women to look perfect is a contributing factor in the decrease of women's mental health?
Yeah, so women, unfortunately, they are more vulnerable to experiencing mental health difficulties from social media. So looking at, you know, the certain images, and what that can do is it can increase body dissatisfaction. And when we're constantly bombarded with these, like, unrealistic body images, it makes it difficult for you to accept, like, your own natural body, your own natural beauty. And what happens is, when your body image is influenced by the exposure of all these unrealistic images, you...
Fake images.
Yeah. So what happens is, it starts to create a pressure that I need to look a certain way. And then you start to pursue this journey of, like, I'm going to reach these certain beauty standards. And often that, what happens is, it's at the expense of your own mental health, because you put a pressure on yourself that you need to look a certain way. So the result of that is you might start developing unhealthy eating behaviours. You can develop eating disorders, like you said, anxiety, depression. And the research shows that the higher the body dissatisfaction, the poorer the quality of life. So when you start having ideas that your value is based on your appearance,
wow.
then you lack confidence, and then you start to feel, what happens is it starts to makes you feel that you, then your mental health starts to decline, and it starts damaging your self-worth because you are attaching your value based on your appearance. Wow.
I do think that young women feel, I know myself, I've got a daughter and I don't want her to feel like she has to, you know, meet those TikTok expectations and, you know, meet the standards of superficial standards of beauty, which are really, I can't wait till natural beauty comes back in fashion because, you know, I'm not really feeling all this fake stuff. But yeah, whilst I was researching, I noticed a connection between trauma and mental health. And I know you mentioned trauma before. what advice would you give to someone who's dealing with trauma or PTSD, for example?
Okay. So, first of all, like, what is PTS? So PTS is post-traumatic stress, just the PTS, not the D yet. So post-traumatic stress, that's your reaction to trauma, so any trauma. So it's normal to have a strong emotional and physical reaction following a distressing event. That's normal and natural for your body. And it's normally in a traumatic event that's out of your control. So for an example, it could be a car crash, it could be witnessing a crime, it could be experiencing some form of abuse. And what might happen is the way your body might react is you might start having physical sensations, trembling, feeling nauseous. Later on, when you're thinking about it, you might get flashbacks, nightmares, intrusive thoughts. And that's because your body is in a heightened state of arousal, and you're having these sort of internal alarms that are going on. So essentially like an emergency mode. So for example, it could be that, let's say I was, you know, driving to work and I witnessed somebody get knocked over by a car. So I've seen that traumatic event and I get to work and then, you know, I might be feeling slightly nauseous, trembling a little bit. I might be thinking about the person that got knocked over, and that's okay because I've just witnessed something traumatic and my body is trying to process that. So what happens is the healing and the recovery process, that involves that the body calms down, it starts to get to sort of a steady level of arousal, and the internal alarm starts to turn off, your high energy levels start to subside, and then your body starts to reset to a normal state of balance. And that takes around a month. And that's okay, that's fine, that's natural, it's normal, your body's trying to process that. But when the D comes, the disorder, so that is when it's going over a month. And that means that your body is struggling to process that trauma, and that's when you need that help and the support.
Okay.
So in that case, what you do, so an example might be, now let's go back to my scenario of the car accident that I witnessed, let's say a few months later, I'm still, when I drive past that road, I get flashbacks, that feeling comes back. You know, months later, I see a certain car that looks the same colour, I get flashbacks. That means that I haven't recovered and processed that. And that's when you need the help. So what you can do is, firstly, just a little tip, when you are experiencing that little panic and you are getting the flashbacks, deep breathing is very helpful. So, you know, breathing in slowly for 4, breathing out for 6. And the technique normally is following like a rectangle shape. So you breathe in for 4, out on the short side, and then out for 6 on the long side. And self-soothing techniques as well, so using your senses, so maybe like, what can I smell, what can I hear, what can I taste, so that helps kind of ground you. But so that's sort of in the moment, but what you should do is get professional help. So so you can go to your GP for an assessment, and what they can do is decide what's the best therapy. So that can be either talking therapy, or they can use a method called CBT, so that's cognitive behavioral therapy. Okay. And what that does is it aims to manage your problems by changing how you think and you act. And then the second therapy, and this is something that I've used, so I can share my own success story that it worked for me. So this is called EMDR, and what that is called eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And what that does is it involves you recall the traumatic event in detail while you're making eye movements, and then you follow the therapist's finger, or you make tapping sounds. And what happens is the rapid eye movement, it's intended to create like a similar effect that the way your brain processes the memory whilst you're asleep. So when I was doing this, first. And I remember the therapist said, you know, close your eyes, do some tapping sounds, recall the memory. And I remember thinking, what the hell am I doing? Like, this is not going to work. And I was very skeptical about it.
Okay.
So I did it 1 week, 2 weeks. It got to week four. I did it for 6 weeks. And then at week six, the therapist asked me to recall the memory. And I physically did not feel the sensations at all. I didn't feel sick. I didn't have the whole experience that I would have felt normally thinking about it. I didn't have it. So what does that mean? That means that my brain, the memory was here at the front. So when I think about it, I was feeling them sensations. Oh. But what the rapid eye movement has done is pushed the memory to the back and it stored it.
Oh, wow.
So now when I think about it, I still will feel upset. But physically, my body's not going to react because that means my body has successfully processed it.
Wow.
And what's really amazing is actually Prince Harry. He is the one that actually raised awareness of EMDR.
Oh, wow.
So what he did was he used EMDR to process his childhood trauma that was related to his mother's death. So because he struggled with that, he ended up doing EMDR and it worked and helped him. So he raised awareness.
Yeah.
And I just want to like kind of conclude this on this quote that Prince Harry shared, which I just loved. And he said, one of the biggest lessons I've learned is that you've got to go back and deal with the really uncomfortable situations to be able to process and heal. And sometimes you have to get uncomfortable to get comfortable. And that's part of the healing process. And going back to the cupboard analogy, you know, once everything falls out of that cupboard, I've got a big job cleaning it up. But once you do that process, I want to be a bit uncomfortable. But once it's all back in the cupboard, nice, neat, the door's closed, I'm going to be comfortable now because I've dealt with it with it well. And I feel like, you know, before that cupboard overflows and you get burnt out, just prioritize your mental health and just keep checking that, you know, where am I at on my mental health? You know, am I scaling really high? Do I need help? Mm-hmm. And you have to prioritize yourself. And if you don't pour into your own cup, how are you going to pour into other people's cup?
Yeah.
So you have to prioritize yourself, self-care, recognizing where you are on that mental health scale and put things in place that prevents you from burning out.
I was about to ask what kind of support is out there, but I think you covered that and really, I think you ended that beautifully.
I will share three really important sort of, in case people do want further support with their mental health. So one is so if you want more help with PTSD in particular, then I would say Mind Charity and Mental Health Foundation Charity, and you can type PTSD there.
Okay.
And that explain like the therapies. And then if in general you want support, so for women, Mind and Agenda, they have a program for women and it's called Women Side by Side.
Okay.
And that's sort of peer support to improve mental health of women. Then we've got Wish, so that's Standing Together for Women's Mental Health, and that's a women mental health charity.
Yeah.
And then there's an app called Hub of Hope. It's a very good app. So what it does is it helps you put your postcode in and it helps you find the most relevant and readily available support that's near you. So that's very good. If you need urgent help, then I would say call 111 and you select the mental health option.
Okay.
And then finally, the listening service is Samaritans. So they actually are a listening service as well. So that's 116123. If you call that number, they're a listening service and they can support you as well. And then for menopause support, there's the DAISY Network and Menopause Matters.
Wow. Thank you so much for that detailed list of support connections.
You're welcome.
I just want to say that it's been a real privilege to have you today. And I feel like I've learned a lot, you know, about mental health. And I think I'm definitely going to reflect on the cupboard analogy.
Yeah.
And I'm going to personally take better care of my mental health.
So my question to you, Sarah, Dr. Sarah, is what are you going to do today for yourself, for your mental health? What's one self-care thing you're going to do?
I'm going to have a soak.
Yes, good.
That's the one thing that I like to do that makes me feel relaxed, is I like to have a soak. So I'm going to do that.
Good.
Make sure I take some time out in the evening. But thank you for joining me. And
thank you for having me.
And hopefully we'll see you again soon.
Yes, hopefully you will. Thank you.